This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Every time I start one of these, I think to myself, maybe I should start this some other way. But it's always fun to have something that kind of is consistent. You guys know that you guys are into the podcast. Before I get rolling, I'm gonna say thank you to our audience guys, because we can't do this without you guys. We love putting out new content and creating new opportunities for you guys to be aware of different people that are doing some cool stuff in restaurant tech. And today is no different. Today we are joined by Dave Dittenberg. I believe I said that right. I try to write it down. He's shaking his head on the video that you guys don't get to hear. But Dave, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about who you are, and then we'll talk a little bit about why you're on the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast.
Great. Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks for having me. So BYOD kind of was bring your own data was an idea of basically 30 years in operation. So, and I'm an operator by background, I started in a dish pit when I was 11 years old in a small town in northern Michigan called Augrey that everybody always spells wrong. And, I got out, I worked for an independent group for a bit, worked for Bloomin' Brands, and then went out on my own in 1997, which is when I opened my first one. And so BYOD has been around now for about 3 years. And the idea behind BYOD was, out of all those years in the restaurants and all the technology platforms and everything that kept coming in terms of tools that we were supposed to use, I still kept seeing our restaurant operations. The profit margins were going down. There was no shortage of technology, but there was a shortage of what's called intervention, right? So a lot of the things that we would get that were bad, they were at a P&L meeting 6 weeks after the fact. And it's like, all right, we have to do better as operators, as an industry. And that was the whole idea of BYOD, kind of the brain that brings in all those IoT feeds, all the different types of information and platforms that we use, that was something agnostic that would allow us to give real-time interventional alerting in the moment, right? So letting our managers and our staff know when they needed to act versus that 6 months later. So BYOD and Mabel, who is our virtual restaurant assistant, she's the person giving real-time interventional alerts to those managers and people on the ground. How does a restaurant dishwasher come to tech? I don't know.
I promise you we're going to get into that, because I always love when I get restaurant operators, because you guys are, I've been at, you and I were talking about a pre-show the last couple of weeks before we recorded this. I've been at restaurant GM conferences for 3 different brands, and it's fun to, they're just a different breed, man. So tell me, so you started as a dishwasher and really kind of just worked your way up. Where was the pivot from working at corporate, working at BBI to doing your own thing? How was that? And, have you always been kind of entrepreneurial at heart, where you see something you want to do and you just kind of go out and get it? Or did some opportunity fall in your lap? Tell me a little bit more about that, just because it's always interesting to hear the backstory of kind of how we went from working for one of the largest restaurant, brands that does casual dining in the country to now I'm going to go start something on my own and figure out how that all works.
It was an interesting background, because the small town, like I said, that I grew up in, there were three restaurant and three pretty predominant restaurant families. And so the independent that I worked for, their son was also a managing partner at Outback Steakhouse at the time. So I would work kind of for both groups. I'd work for the independent and I was working for Outback while I was in school at the time. And this was early Outback, like that 94, 95. So in the growth part of the brands. And so, a lot of the things at that point, you were the first Outback on Alpine in Grand Rapids, we were in a portable construction trailer, right? That's where I did my first interview, right? It was that type of stuff. And so straight up, ground up. But it was a great experience, because you got to see kind of the independent portion, right? And people that had, and the son, who is the managing partner, was also part of the family business beginning. And then he got out of the family business and went on to Outback and was with them for 20 some years. And so it was a really good way to, I guess, see both sides of the business, right? And be able to kind of understand. So my parents were entrepreneurial. My mom had her own business and that kind of thing. So I guess I was around it, but I wasn't, Yeah, I went to school to be a doctor, right? Like, and I was in pre-med. And then when I came back and finally did tell my parents, hey, listen, I think this hospitality thing's for me, and my dad's looking at me, first person out of my family to graduate from college, going like, why didn't you just do this before? Why did you have to go down that route? So, I think all those factors kind of led into, hey, I think that this is something that, you know, would be viable. And then the reality of going and running your own restaurant business is everything that you think that you know doesn't apply at all, right? Like, I wasn't a back office guy. I was a front hospitality guy training. I knew all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we talk about P&Ls. If you would have asked me what one of those looked like before, you know, maybe I started my own business, it would have been very, so it was let's call it the school of hard knocks in those first couple of years. So yeah, 97 was the first year I went right from, you know, graduating from school and kind of finishing from Outback and moving to Bay City and doing my first restaurant, Old City Hall.
I love it. I love it. And do you still own the restaurant? Still, are the restaurants still in operations, or you know, are you have you kind of divested yourself from what you're doing there?
No, I still own it. So I'm still the principal, but we have a management company called Downtown Restaurant Investments with a number of people. So we have six just open, our seventh, and then we manage a couple others. But, you know, my day-to-day operations is predominantly BYOD. And then we utilize the restaurants, especially in the initial technology phases, as kind of our beta stomping grounds. Right?
I'm sure those GMs just love you because they're like, hey, I got a new idea. Let me watch. Here, watch how this goes. And they're like, oh, he's coming in for lunch again. Crap, he's got new software that's going to come in, I'm sure. So,
yeah, they were not happy, Jeremy, at first. But it's been good grounds to be able to do that in, in a good environment. And then I think the other thing too is so many times from a technology point of view, things have been pushed down to operators instead of created from the inside out. So I think the managers and the management company has embraced that. And it's been a good thing. But yeah, you're exactly right. There are a few times that people were not very excited to see me walk in the door.
That's so funny. I love it. I love it. So you kind of alluded to kind of your journey, and you've been a restaurant, you know, operator for other brands. You started your own thing, and then, you know, you threw out BYOD. But for our audience members that either haven't heard of you guys or, you know, let's talk about what the problem that you recognized that didn't exist, a solution didn't exist for you when you were either operating your own restaurants or operating Outback that caused you to go, I can solve this problem. Kind of like, you know, and I'm sure you get your teeth kicked in just a little bit, and we can talk about that journey as well. Because
still getting your teeth kicked in, right?
Welcome to the world of technology. It's so simple. It's kind of like people, you know, it's amazing. I mean, a little personal story. We adopted 9 years ago, and everybody's like, oh, I want to adopt. And, you know, and then you realize how hard it is. And, oh, I want to run a restaurant. It's like, no, you don't. Like, it's really hard. And now, oh, no, I can start a tech company. Oh, there's lots of tools out there. It's so easy. You just go find a coder, and they'll solve these problems. So let's talk a little bit about what the solution is. I've done all three, and I've adopted, I've run restaurants and run tech companies. It's, you know, all of them have their own sets of challenges for sure.
It is. And again, from the tech side of things, I hate to oversimplify the story, but it's also a good one. My other co-founder, Frank Loix, Frank was an information systems guy at Dow Chemical. And so their headquarters is here in Midland, Michigan. And as Frank likes to say, he's been doing AI since 1974. And so, you know, he talks when the first time I met Frank, I came rolling into my restaurant, and there's this 6'4" European standing behind my bar sniffing scotch bottles. And I'm like, who the heck is this guy? So long story short, we developed a friendship while he was still at Dow. And the problem, you know, and I kept talking to him about it because I was not a data scientist. I'm not a coder, you know, not a consultant. Don't think in that Six Sigma brain, if you will, or didn't know anything about, you know, the idea, let's call it the ideology of programming, right? Or even that mindset. And so I would tell Frank, you know, hey, there's all these systems, you know, but what I see is our managers and even me as an owner, at one point we had 17 different systems, Jeremy, you know, and all that tech, they didn't even call it tech stack. It was sexy to call it tech stack at this point. But, you know, to your point, you just alluded to it. As an operator, you're trying to bring tools in that you feel like can help your managers and operators, and especially growing up in that position, wanting them to be able to do their job better and give them the tools that they need to do to be successful. The problem is you as the operator bring all these new things in and then they have to implement it. And basically it's like, this doesn't work. And so what we found was, is that most of the time our managers were sitting in the back room and they were trying to look through, they were becoming analysts instead of what they should be doing is managing the hospitality of the business, right? Making sure the customers and the training was in line. And so I just started to talk to Frank about some of those things because, you know, he always used to laugh about, hey, listen, if we don't do things at the right time in the chemical industry, things blow up, right? That's not a good thing. And he says, while operationally, that is maybe not as, I don't know, urgent from a restaurant point of view, if those, you know, incremental things add up over time, then you have an issue. So I tell Frank the problem. It's like, hey, we got these 17 systems. We got somebody in the back. How can we go in and how can we not utilize the 95% of the information that people don't care about? But let's just take all those streams and let's worry about the 5% that really allow us to be able to do our business better and get the managers out from behind that computer screen and out doing what they're good at. And so at first you looked at me like I was crazy, right? Because you've got all these disparaging platforms. Nothing talks to each other. It reminds me of, you know, working on a modern day car, right? Like it's designed for the way that you can't do those type of things, right? It's not very self-sufficient. And so I told Frank, I said, from an operator perspective, it has to be simple, but yet let's utilize the data to make, you know, the right decisions. So that's where he had kind of, in the beginning, was kind of mentoring me and coaching me to work in the data science, with data science, not in the data. You don't want me coding or doing anything, but starting to work and work with data scientists, starting to bring those things together and then starting to build things where we could actually make it more real time, right? And so as information came in, we could give them the interventional alerts is what we call them to be able to make those decisions. And so that's kind of how it evolved over time. It started over sniffing scotch and that ended up, you know, in a room talking with six team members talking about data science and how we could go in and build the tools to, you know, integrate into the restaurants.
I love that. I love that. And I think, you know, all of our audience are restaurant operators, but I think, you know, back to our conversation at the beginning where it's like, oh, it's easy to run a restaurant and people don't understand how many different data elements you have and how many different things you have to manage. You got to manage staffing, you got to manage food costs, you got to manage labor costs, you got to manage, make sure food, you know, hot food stays hot, cold food stays cold, gets to the guests at the time that it needs to get to the guests. And you got to run the front desk and make sure that the front desk is being staffed. You got to make sure the bathroom is clean. You got to make sure that, you know, tables are getting clean and sanitized. TV, and then you get the health, you know, department shows up and then you get the fire department that shows up and all of those things are different elements to running a business. And oftentimes, you know, restaurants doing $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million a year in revenue, which is not a ton because they're typically running in the high single digits or low double digits as far as profit margins. So it's not like they're making, you know, 50% profit margins. And so you talk about all of those different complexities, Dave. Tell me a little bit, where did you guys focus? You said you're a front of the house guy. I know lots of people have talked about kind of the data analysis as it relates to, you know, food costing and making sure that you know, portioning. You know, there's other people that have tried to solve the task list and the checklist stuff from the front of the house to make sure that the bathroom checks get done at the time that the bathroom, you know. Tell me a little bit more, like, where did you guys focus the product? Because I'm sure it's nowhere near where it was 3 years ago when you guys started. But where did you guys focus? Like, really dig down deep to where that first itch was that you guys were trying to scratch to try and help those operators. Because I love the mindset that you have that says, I'm an operator at heart and I know what it takes to run a successful restaurant. And I know how hard it is to get somebody from Greenfield, they just came out of the retail industry and now running a restaurant. And I've now hired this guy that used to work at Best Buy and he's now coming in and going to be an assistant manager running a Thursday night shift for me. I need to be able to help him make the right decisions that I do intuitively because I've been doing it for 25 years that he needs to now know how to do. And again, I know I'm trying to tee you up here, but talk to me a little bit about where were you trying to solve that itch? And then let's talk about the progression of the product as time has gone on.
Sure. And I think the big thing that we knew was an issue even pre-pandemic was labor. We knew that, you know, the problem with scheduling and, you know, what was happening in the day-to-day business and how that could be extrapolated right into to daily cost savings and efficiencies. So initially we really dialed in on labor, which from a pandemic point of view really helped us, right? Because then you had kind of the great resignation. So it wasn't just about the labor shortage or the inefficiencies. It came down to now all of a sudden it was inexperience, right? So the, you know, something where if you didn't schedule correctly or you weren't able to, you know, make the appropriate adjustments in the moment, then it became even more extrapolated. So those, especially you mentioned the assistant and the management. I mean, that is, it's amazing how well you just described that, right? Because we've had such a shift out of the industry. And to your point, you know, the 25 years of intuition, I had people that worked for me since 1997. And then after 97, or, you know, after pandemic, when things first started to shut down here in Michigan, we lost our kind of core group up to retirement and things like that. And so we were in, from a restaurant operations point of view, we were just, you know, we were really inexperienced. And so from the labor point of view, we watched as we opened back up people that just didn't know how to do the things, right? Because they, you know, first of all, there was already this shift in terms of the business models and those type of things. It was hard enough for experienced people to do it, let alone not. And so the labor piece for us, you know, we call it smart scheduling, where part of the data analysis, you know, we've been able to go in and you know, produce schedules for people given their individual data points to be able to, you know, make sure that instead of just a predictive schedule, that it's something that is a learning algorithm that Mabel continues to learn about their place and will make the decisions then. Also from a labor point of view, hey, this person needs to be cut at this moment. You have too many staff on there. So those were the things that we knew that, you know, were hard enough pre-pandemic, let alone, you know, we watched our labor with the cost and the decisions being made at the wrong times just extrapolate into, right? I mean, percentage points, you mentioned it. It 1, 2, 3 percentage points were really easy to get missed in you know, cost or in an experience. So that's where we really wanted to, from a BYOD, from scheduling and cutting and make sure we were making appropriate decisions.
I love that. And sorry to interject, but I think it's so amazing because I think all too often, and I'm certain you saw this in your, you know, 20 plus years, and is people do these things based on gut or intuition. Well, one, the gut walked out the door when they retired after 25 years of working for you. Second, the gut decisions oftentimes aren't data driven and they cause you to lose those 1, 2, or 3 percentage points on labor costs, which, you know, if I'm running a 25% labor cost, 1% on a $2 million restaurant is a pretty significant. I mean, that's a brand new Mercedes every year. Just a 1% cost is a brand new Mercedes E-Class. So, you know, that kind of decision can ultimately, you know, cost your business that by not doing it right. So I'm going to let you continue. So you guys kind of started on the labor side. Is that really where you guys, you know, you guys were scratching that first itch? And then talk to me a little bit about kind of where that's gone from there. Because I think it's, sure. I think it's amazing as I sit and listen to you talk about the things that you guys are trying to use data to solve restaurant challenges, that you or I could walk in to anybody's restaurant and go, yeah, they're overstaffed in the kitchen. They need to do something here. They need to do something there. But ultimately, that took many, many scars for you and I to do that. And how do I now accelerate that so that more restaurants can be more successful more often and not be in that, you know, 70% of restaurants fail in the first, you know, 12 months and 85 after the first, you know, 2 years or whatever, you know?
As you're saying that, it made me think of, I was talking with one of my former bosses and I said, yeah, it's exactly went through the same thing that you just said. Hey, for me, I could walk in, I could make decisions, or you could. And he stops me, says, listen, Dave, you weren't that wonderful when you first got started. And I was like, that is so, but it's so true, right? I mean, it's something that you, and again, I can't tell you to the point where some of these things you're able to identify, right? And you know, I'm sure you sounds like you've been in enough of the trenches to know exactly where to make those decisions. You know, that was what we wanted to have Mabel do. We wanted to have Mabel not just be a, you know, an X plus Y equals Z, you know, that learned type of things that we've learned in our brain over the year, or the different factors that come into it at the different times, that's to me where we felt like something like AI or machine learning could really apply, right? Versus a lot of these top-down solutions, whereas, oh my God, the alert's going off. And it's like, well, yeah, but there's an event coming up in 30 minutes. I'm not going to cut my entire kitchen staff because I know when this thing gets out across. So, you know, you had to take those other factors in, which is where Mabel and the BYOD takes those geographic things. It takes other things within the restaurant. And so I'll be honest with you, Jeremy, we kind of fell into the labor thing because it was the most prominent need in the industry at the time. To be honest with you, it's probably the least sexy too, but it's to your point, that 1% and, you know, labor costs is the most significant. What's been interesting in the industry is everybody, and I'm not against automation or robotics or any of that kind of stuff, but people in the beginning, we even kind of fell into, and you talk about not knowing what you're doing running a tech company, instead of going to the most practical, simple pieces that were most valuable to the operators, people were cameras and camera feeds and behaviors. And we've done a lot of that, you know, computer vision stuff, which will be part of our, you know, releases, and part of it's involved in our first release. In other words, you know, we can still look at and process a lot of camera feeds to look at things like behaviors where someone's not portioning correctly, somebody's not cutting, someone's not using gloves, all that type of stuff. But the reality is the decision and the labor and that 1% is what is the difference between that 70% and not. So the product evolution, we're continuing to bring more data feeds in. I believe I'm a cost of goods guy, so I believe that it comes down to food and labor up front and in terms of costing. And then the other thing that we all know is really important is just a customer experience. If you don't have happy customers, you don't have a business. So to me, it's about those things first. And then unfortunately or fortunately, however you look at it, the sexy stuff comes later. But if you look at it, those are to me not as important, but yet they're the fun stuff that everybody wants to sit in a tech design meeting and talk about, right? It's like, how can we do this? So you mentioned the tech thing, like it's amazing how easy it is to get it off base. And, you know, I'm the worst because I'm like, yeah, let's put cameras here and let's, you know.
Yeah. And you've got a million ideas of ways to solve those things. Cause you know, that one Tuesday in November that you had to deal with this problem, you still remember that and still have a scar from it. And they're like, oh, we can put that in the product. It's going to help these people. So you've talked about Mabel a couple of times, or you've thrown that out there. I know it's a piece of tech that you guys have that's really part of your guys' overall solution. But why don't you walk me through what Mabel does? Because, and I'm going to set you up here a little bit, Dave, because I personally don't think that what you guys are doing, save the Mabel piece, is super unique. Because I think being able to get predictive scheduling and analytics, you know, 50 people out there that do that, right?
Yeah.
You know, being able to get good food costs and make sure that you got the right product in the shelf at the right time and you're prepping it at the right time, you know, so you don't have any food waste, and figuring out that somebody's walking around with a case of chicken breasts, all that stuff, there's a million people out there. And what you talked about early on is you found a lot of restaurant operators sitting in the office, running reports, looking at these things, trying to solve those problems, not dealing with the guests, not dealing with the staff, because back to your point, you know, which is really pivot point number three of, I got to make sure that I've got happy guests, and they only are happy if they get served properly, if the food's hot, if it, you know, shows up on time, if it meets their expectations, if it meets the price point that they're looking for. So talk to me a little bit about what Mabel does and how it, I don't want to say rounds out the solution, but really gives the data to the operators when they need it, where they need it, those kind of things.
Sure. And the idea behind also was, you know, I've always liked the word agnostic. As an operator, the first thing that I saw was all the platforms, and it's changed a lot in the last 3 years. But, you know, when you would talk initially about APIs and getting your own information, like companies were just not into that, right? So our two principles are, you know, we want to be agnostic. And frankly, I don't want to build anything, right? I want to integrate with solutions that operators use and can do well. But the problem that I have seen as an operator, and you know, I deal with a couple of them, Targetable, Marquee, Ovation, I'll use those three just because as an operator, they're great platforms. But what happens was, is I have to have somebody that's looking at each one of those backends or getting push notifications from one, you know, and again, when you talk about 17, something's going to get missed, right? So if you think of BYOD as the brain that brings in all these platforms, right, into one spot, and then Mabel is the person that communicates back the action at a specific time. So she's an aggregator. And frankly, some of it isn't AI, right? Some of it is just putting it in to the right spot where it needs to be actioned at the right time. But what that collective nature of all those data streams does is it starts to teach your individual, you know, workplace the different nuances that have to happen at the right time. And so what Mabel starts to do is learn as to how things can be, decisions can be made at the correct time in your specific establishment versus, you know, so there's a ton, you mentioned it, there's no shortage of technology, but the problem is a lot of that technology, either the data streams are completely disparaging, they don't talk to one another, or you can't get access to it. And so the reality was, is we wanted to make something that from that brain, bring it into the BYOD brain, let Mabel be the persona that allows her to work and as an assistant with your people, not automate, but augment, right? So augmented intelligence instead of automated, right? And so that was the idea behind it. To your point, we want to take all those good tools in, which to me, from a digital point of view in the industry, you need to have, because if you don't have digital, you can't have it. But the problem is all those different digital pieces of exhaust don't equate into something where you can actually make a good decision, right? And that's what Mabel does. She takes the information in, processes it, and makes a decision just like you and I would as a 25-year experience manager. Yep.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's something that's worth recognizing and saying is 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 10 years ago, the tech companies that were out there weren't as willing to talk to each other. More and more, they've either been forced by their customers or they realize that they're going the way of the dodo bird if they don't. And so the ability to get to that data now versus where it was 5 or 10 years ago is significantly better, which I think has caused a democratization of tech to the restaurant vertical to allow them the ability to get to the data that they need from point of sale, from back office, from labor, from, you know, IoT devices that you talked about, which is great. And I love that. And I think it's enabling platforms like yours. Silly little question, just because it's sticking in my brain. Where did Mabel come from? Where's the name? Is it the name of your daughter? Is it the, you know, tell me where Mabel came from, just because I think it's, I'm sure there's an interesting story behind that. And I'd love to have you share it with our audience.
So when I first got into this field, we were doing medical stuff and I was working with IBM Watson Health. Right. And so early stage of machine learning, and every time you would talk about IBM Watson, somebody would feel like you'd need to drag IBM Watson and this super cute computer into the middle of the room. Like it was a very difficult thing for people to understand, right? Because they wanted to have it as a person. And so I always knew that I wanted something, like I said, to augment and help. And that the best person I could ever think to do that was my manager, Rose Grappin, who was like my second mother, who is one of those people that just retired. You know, her and I still have coffee, you know, once every other month, and we text back and forth. She's enjoying her retirement and her dog, Hank, and her husband, and driving him nuts. But Rose was the perfect balance of the sweet lady that could also be that operational get after it person. And that's where Mabel came from. You know, at first when we wanted to make Mabel a real person, right? All the places that I worked always had a Rose, right? It always had that stable base of somebody that everybody knew who to go to and that they could trust that was there to help them. So, you know, Rose, Mabel is Rose, but she wouldn't let me name it Rose. So she said, yeah, she's awesome too. And really something that typifies from an operational point of view, what's really important to us as operators. Like I really love technology, I do, but I believe there needs to be some old school in the thought process of operations in order to make it personal, right? And that to me is something that I think the customers and the employees really, you know, to make it not think of this heavy-handed technology. And again, like IBM Watson, that somebody's always watching. You know, what I tell people is somebody's always watching, you know, and you could sit there and go through camera feeds every minute if you want to. The reality is we only want the information, just like when Rose was there working a shift, right? She's going to look at the things that make a difference at the right time. Right. So that's where it came from. It was, you know, fun play. And she just, there was no way. She's like, I'm not letting you name it Rose.
I love that. That's so cool. And again, you've talked about Mabel almost like as if it's a human being, which I had a sense. I mean, we didn't talk about this pre-show, but I just had a sense that Mabel was a personification of somebody that really had done this, where it's like, hey, Dave, remember, you've got to go do this. And Dave, make sure that you're doing that for your shift. And Dave, have you done this today? Which, again, is kind of the nature of what you guys are trying to do with BYOD. Talk to me a little bit about the success. Tell me more about what are you hearing from operators? What are you hearing from your operators? How is it impacting their day? How does it make their shift run better? And where are you seeing those results so that our audience can put themselves in the shoes of your operators and your customers if they haven't already been convinced from the first 30 minutes we've talked about it? How is it making a difference for the guests? How is it making a difference for the brand? How is it making a difference for the owners? Tell me a little bit more about a couple of success stories if you have a.
Sure. Yeah. And I think obviously from the operator point of view, it comes down to two pieces of ROI. It needed to show savings. It needed to be easy to implement, right? And so, you know, the thing as an operator, and we took a little bit longer probably than even people said we should have, because we wanted to make sure that we got the implementation right, right? It couldn't be something where so many products that we dealt with that were like, oh, this is in 6 months from now, it should work, or a year from, you know, and it's like, we don't have that type of time to go in and take that. So, you know, we've really worked with the operators to ensure that we've improved and continue to improve that experience, because we don't want to come in there on one side and say, oh, well, you know, we want to save people from sitting behind a computer, and then they're sitting behind a computer to onboard a solution, right? So that was really important to us. And then the other thing is, you know, we said, hey, if you want to go in and our early people, if you want to engage, or if you want to gauge how people and your managers are now interacting more with your customers or your staff, you know, just look at your social media scores, tie it back to something, because that time that they were spending back in the back running reports, now if they go out there and they, you know, can do things like concentrate on training, you know, and concentrate on guest experience. And we've seen, you know, about a 15 to 20% increase in customer satisfaction scores on social media. The other thing is, from an ROI, from just the cost point of view, you know, we wanted to make it affordable and frankly a commodity. So we're $250 a month cost, and you know, you start to see those savings immediately. We've seen anywhere between a 1 and 3 point reduction in labor cost, right? And so there, we have what's called a MAD score, that you don't want to make Mabel mad. It's the Mabel actual deviation, which is our version of man versus machine, you know. And even in my own places, Jeremy, I was seeing, and you mentioned, you know, our restaurants run between on average, $2.25 and $2.5 million in sales per unit. We were seeing between a 1 and 2% reduction in our MAD scores. Even when we had experienced people, or I would go in there and do it, there were nights that I was leaving $160 on the table.
Yeah, you know? It's insane that you now, through data, can make those decisions and see what the impact is. That's enormous.
Yep. So I think that's the case. And I think, so obviously the customers have seen it, the employers and the employees and the managers, not just in our own places, but people that we've worked with from, you know, inception and beta of the product, have seen it get a lot smarter too, right? It's not just about what we trained Mabel to look for. It's what we trained Mabel not to look for, right? And taking that bias and the decision-making out of it, and allowing, as you say, the data to be able to make the decisions versus a gut instinct, right? And again, I appreciate that. Being an old school manager, I appreciate the gut instinct. Sometimes you need to do it. The thing is, when you look at man versus machine on MAD scores, I usually get my butt kicked by Mabel on a pretty. It is, man. It is.
I mean, what's that? I mean, I heard a statistic a while ago about doctors and being able to diagnose patients that, you know, they're you know, then you put it into something like Watson, and you know, all of the data elements come in, you know, but they say that doctors get the initial diagnosis wrong like 60% of the time or something, because they can only have so many data elements, whereas these computers can do this. And the part that I know a lot of people are a little bit freaked out about, but I think it's great for making the world better, is that the more data you give it, the better decisions it makes, or it helps you make. And I love that.
100%. And the other thing too is this is, you know, we use, I mentioned Frank, but Frank always used to say, he's like, you know, all these, think of it as a box of Lego bricks, right? And you've got all these different types of technologies that it's not just about building an algorithm. There's a bunch of open source public stuff that's already out there. And, you know, what you need to do is you need to take the pieces, like, you know, maybe it's a machine learning model at part of the algorithm, and maybe it's a computer vision, but then, you know, you want to have supervised learning as part of this, right? And again, knowing at the right spots how to use this, it's not just a blanket, not one company, not one algorithm. And that's why, again, I love this agnostic approach, because you need to have people that do things really well, whether it be startups or technology companies, and to your point, working together to really do what's good for the industry. And that's really what was in it for me, right? I want to see these changes, because frankly, I was sick of watching the profit margins and people leaving the industry. Those numbers are dismal. And it is, right, like, as an industry, we need to figure out ways to work together to get those changes. So
either that, or it's going to just become dumbed down and everything's going to look like a Starbucks and a McDonald's, which I don't personally like either. And I'm not saying anything bad about those brands, but they've figured out how to do it and be successful. And ultimately, it takes the hospitality out of hospitality, which is what I've heard you say the whole time.
100%. And again, on that note, I mean, to me, I love QSRs. I love, you know, all these places. I support all of them. But at the end of the day, hospitality to me still has to have a name and a face. And I feel like the overcorrection in the industry with non-hospitable things in the last couple of years has to make a shift back towards the middle, right? And again, in the technology space we play in, I realize, you know, people always want to make it more complicated than it is. And we always are like, hey, it's practical, it's simple, right? The data is being created. Let's not overthink it, but let's put it in a way that even that independent that I worked for 25 years ago could put it in their restaurant. But the reality is the enterprises are the ones that really need to think about that, because those 1% add up a lot quicker, you know, with that amount of units. So, but it should be available to everybody. And I think it's something that is starting to be able to, and that's what we're really proud of.
I love it. I love it. Well, you have teed yourself up to say, so now I've sat through the last 40 minutes of sitting and listening to us talk. How do people get in touch with your team? What does that onboarding look like? You know, I'm now sold. I want BYOD for my business. How do they get engaged with your team? How do they learn more? How do they figure out if they're the right client for you guys? Those kind of things.
Yeah. And we keep that simple too. Our sales inflow comes through our website at byod.ai. Our LinkedIn page has the ability to request the demos and any calls to action that need to happen. And then it's just sales at byod.ai. And it's again, really, I think the closing message is, I'm really excited how the industry has embraced technology. And the reality is we just want to continue to make it very simple to put it in people's hands.
I love it. I love it. And you're not careful. You're like a tech CEO now. You're not a restaurant operator anymore. You know, you're talking about this AI and talking about all these different integration touch points. You know, Frank's going to pull you into the tech side, you know, before you know it.
I can tell you what, there's no way my tech team wants anything to do with me on that. I will just derail, you know, weeks of conversations but it's really been fun and I appreciate it, but I'll always be an operator at heart, which by the way, is why I love what you guys do. You're an operator at heart and I really appreciate the, you know, just the mission and what you guys are trying to do. So, you know, the operators need to stick together too.
Awesome. Well, Dave, I can't thank you enough for not only, you know, sharing your time and kind of the vision for what you guys are doing, but really trying to solve restaurant operator problems. I mean, I'm one of those guys that's a growth mindset guy, you know, when all ships in the harbor rise together. And I think solutions like yours help restaurants operate better. And ultimately, it drives more behavior to make sure that people are out in restaurants. And enjoying those hospitable experiences because they're done right through the augmentation of technology, not through the automation of everything. And I love that you guys have that that fine line where it's like, let me help you, but we're still going to keep the human aspect in there. Guys, while you guys are online checking out BYOD, if you haven't already subscribed to the newsletter, please do so. Once a month, you guys will get an email with all of the blogs, podcasts, anything else that comes out to anything else that we have going on the Restaurant Technology Guys website. Last couple of things that I would ask of you guys, if you guys haven't already rated the podcast, go ahead and do that on your favorite podcast player because it helps others to learn more about it. Check out Dave's product and what they're doing over at BYOD. And Dave, thank you again for your time. And to our audience, make it a great day.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.